Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Welcome to Upfront with Glenn Murray and me, Sam Matterface. This is the show that takes you into the world of the centre forward, the number nine, as we find out what it takes to be a top-flight striker.
And here comes Glenn Murray! He sends McCarthy the wrong way and gives Brighton a precious early lead!
We'll discuss the sacrifices they had to make, the moves that didn't quite work out, and the pressure of being a striker.
It's Glenn Murray in front of the former fans! He scores the goal, which surely will yield them all 3 points.
And the feeling of when the ball hits the back of the net. You're listening to Upfront with Glenn Murray and me, Sam Matterface, on TalkSport. My guest today is, at the time of recording, still playing in the Premier League and planning on keeping doing so until at least, I think, his 39th year, if I read the contract properly. He, to date, has scored 111 goals in 271 games over two spells with Brighton, winning League One, being a runner-up in the Championship, plus winning League Two with Carlisle. A striker that story takes us from working on a building site whilst playing in non-league to 7 years in the Premier League, and probably the only player who can say that he is a hero at both Brighton and Crystal Palace. It's got to be Glenn Murray. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. What keeps you going? The goals, the fans, or just the love of the game?
I think a little bit of everything, and I think, to be perfectly honest, it's where I was raised and sort of my upbringing. I've just got a determination that I just can't seem to shake.
Were you always a centre forward? Did you always have that drive, that determination to be that number nine?
Yes, always enjoyed scoring goals. That's pretty much the only thing I enjoyed doing on a football pitch. I did get sort of shunned to left back at one point in my schoolboy year at Carlisle United, which obviously didn't end very well. Always been a striker since.
What is your definition of a striker, a centre forward?
Well, it depends what your attributes are, I suppose. But I think the main thing is you need to add goals to your game and be a focal point for your team going forward.
What do you think you are? What type of forward do you think you've been?
An okay one.
You've been in the Premier League for 7 years. You're more than okay.
Yeah, I mean, just what I said there, I work to my attributes, so I try and hold the ball up for my team and get the team further up the field and sort of when I get time, I lay it off to my wingers and then my next job is to get in the box and try and get on the end of crosses and score goals.
Have you changed over the years?
That's a really good question, actually. I suppose I have. I've adapted the way I go about things these days, but unfortunately, I've never had much speed, so I can't adapt my game too much. I've just tried to work with what I've got and do the best I can with that.
How important is movement and timing and reading of the game, and do you get better at that with experience?
Yeah, definitely. The longer you stay in the game, the more understanding you have and the better your movement is and the more... I just think the more confident you are, really, in general, of your movements, you're not questioning yourself. And as strikers do, we go on sort of goalless runs. And as a younger striker, you can get really sort of snowed under with it and worried. But it's about just continuing to do the same things that got you in the in that position in the first place and sort of still getting across your defender over and over again, and eventually that ball will drop and one will go in, and then hopefully the floodgates will open.
He's overturned it! He's only got it given the goal! Oliver's given the goal! Glenn Murray scored again!
Has VAR changed your game?
I think it's changed everyone's.
In what way have you had to adapt?
I just think there's less of the clever professional fouls, little nudges, tugs, sort of that you would give your opponents out of the eye of the referee and linesman. So yeah, and obviously then the offside thing. I mean, it was always the striker's advantage to the striker to score a goal. So if it was a really tight questionable decision, then your goal would stand. But now obviously if it's onside or offside, so we're seeing that a lot more goals are chalked off for very marginal decisions.
You currently wear number 17 on the back of your shirt. Did you ever have a fight over wearing the number 9 shirt? Was it ever important to you? Does a number mean anything to you?
The number means a lot to me, yeah. 17 means a lot to me. 9's never meant anything to me. And I've never felt the need to try and get a number 9 or a number 10 shirt, whatever, at any level. Hasn't interested me. If anything, I think if you walk into a club and demand to be number 9, then you're putting extra pressure on your shoulders, needless pressure. For me, 17, I got given 17. I think it was at Rochdale, I think I started with number 17, and then it's just been really good to me ever since. So wherever I've gone, my first question is, can I have number 17? And it's usually a yes.
Nobody else has usually got it. We talked earlier about you playing on until you're going to be late into your 30s. Have you got more aware of what you should be eating, and how much of a role did Bruno play in that?
So yeah, obviously played with Bruno. I think it was his 38th and 39th year. And I think at the time I was about 30, 35, 36, and it was really good to be in the same change room as him, as a role model and someone to look up to. Even at my old age then of 36, it was good to have somebody else to look up to see how he was continuing to keep his fitness up and his diet and remain playing at such a high level for so long. So that was a real blessing, actually.
Okay, let's warm you up with a couple of quick fire questions and get a sense of who Glenn Murray is. What's your favourite goal?
One away at QPR in the championship winning season for Brighton.
Over the top is Murray. He's onside. He's through one-on-one with the keeper. Glenn Murray scores for the Albion! How important could that goal be for the Seagulls on their path to the Premier League?
What was your most important goal?
My most important goal was probably breaking the deadlock on the afternoon that we got promoted against Wigan.
Brighton have got an excellent chance and they've opened the scoring. It was across to the right-hand side. Glenn Murray converted. What a dream start for Chris Hughton's side as they seek back-to-back victories and take an almighty step towards the Premier League.
What was the weirdest goal you've ever scored?
The weirdest goal I've ever scored was in the FA Cup. It was 1 or 2 years ago, away at West Bromwich Albion.
Right.
I got substituted on by Chris Hughton, our then manager, and managed to score with a part of my body that I've never scored with before.
Should I just leave the rest to the imagination?
You can do, yeah.
And don't tell me it's this part of your body, but who's your favourite strike partner?
Do you know what? I've been lucky to have a lot of good strike partners that I've enjoyed playing with. Sam Baldock, Alfie Lafondre, linked up really well. Mm. I always try to be as adaptable as possible to the person I'm playing with to try and forge that relationship and try and make it not one way, try and make it a two-way street, whereas my first thought is to look for him and hopefully his first thought is to look for me, and then I think you can forge really good partnerships. But you say strikers, but I had a really good partnership with two wingers at Crystal Palace in Yannick Bolasie and Wilfried Zaha.
Just in the turning hit, Yannick Bolasie. Murray waiting in the centre. What a start for Crystal Palace. Wilfried Zaha. Murray!
You're a big Manchester United fan. And who was your childhood hero?
Eric Cantona.
Well, it's just teed up for Cantona. Goal! A real cracker from Cantona.
Everything about him, just his aura, just the way he could change a game in sort of in a second. He could look as though he wasn't interested for the whole afternoon and then just turn on a bit of magic and just sort of light the stadium up. Whether it be a great goal or whether it be an amazing pass, he just seemed, obviously Manchester United were the best team in the Premier League back then, and he just seemed even a level above all his teammates.
What manager got the best out of you?
Which manager got the best out of me? Wow, you're hitting some really difficult questions here. Chris Hughton, I did really well under Chris Hughton. Scored a lot of goals for Brighton, my second stint under Chris. Gus Poyet, my first stint. I learned a lot from Gus. He sort of he brought a new way of playing football into what was then League One. A very successful spell for Brighton. And then my other manager that got a lot out of me was probably Dougie Freeman, a former striker himself at Crystal Palace.
Because he took you there, didn't he? He identified that you were available. We thought you were exactly what they needed at the time, and he was the one who sort of instigated that move for you.
Yeah, he did, yeah. And then obviously we'd spend quite a lot of afternoons working on finishing and him telling where I was going wrong and where I could do better and where he felt as though I should be sort of running. But it was just sort of like his little tips on the training field that just like real simple things, even for a striker, but just to be reminded of that as a professional was really refreshing.
Which defender was your toughest opponent?
Yeah, I had a few tough defenders. Obviously, the pairing of Ferdinand and Vidic was... that was pretty tough.
They're okay, weren't they?
John Terry read the game brilliantly. And then I think the current one that's outstanding is Virgil van Dijk.
The right-footed shot smacks into the face of Field. Might run through to Murray. Does run through to Murray. No coming back now. He's arrowed it past the goalkeeper and into the net. An excellent finish. He has come off the bench to score two goals for Brighton and Hove Albion tonight.
Some strikers were plucked and identified at an early age as a top-level pro in the making, went to academies or to a special finishing school. You were different and your route to the top was different. In a sense, a little more interesting as well. You were playing for Workington Reds, and then what happened? How did you end up in North Carolina?
Well, firstly, I went right through the schoolboy years with Carlisle United. And at 15, I was told that I wasn't going to get my YTS. So then I just went out and just played some amateur football in my hometown of Maryport, played for a team called Netherhall. And funnily enough, the coach there, James Irvin, his brother David Irvin, who played for Everton back in the 70s, was out in America. Coaching a team called Wilmington Hammerheads in North Carolina. And he just said, do you fancy going out for a 2 weeks trial, see how it goes, and if it goes well, spend the season out there. And yeah, it was a no-brainer for me at that time. I had what was quite a steady job in a factory, and I used to go around the factory grounds and things, and I'd hear old guys in their 50s and 60s be like, oh, I've been here for like 40 years and stuff. And I was like, that sounds like hell to me. And I didn't want that to be me. That isn't what I wanted to do. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to take this opportunity. I'm going to get on a plane. I'm going to go to America and see what happens.
What sort of factory was it?
It was a factory that made plastic stickers.
Wow. I can understand why you didn't want to be there for 40 or 50 years. when you came back from the United States, you came back to England, you ended up playing for Barrow, you started really well there, 7-7. Did you have a job at the same time as doing that?
So the story goes, I went out to America for 3 years. I used to go sort of from about March time until September, October. And then I used to come back and I used to play for Workington Reds at the time, which was, I think, Unibond Prem or Unibond First. And then I would go back out to America. I would never finish or start the season for Workington. And whilst doing that, I was a plasterer. And then in my last year in America, lo and behold, Sunderland came out on a pre-season tour, a Premier League Sunderland, actually, with Mick McCarthy in charge. And yeah, played really well against them in their pre-season game, and then luckily enough I got picked for a very American term, an all-star league team, to play Sunderland, and I played well again. And Mick McCarthy just invited me back on trial, came back to Sunderland, spent about 6-8 weeks at Sunderland, and unfortunately it didn't work out. Mick pulls me in his office and he's like, listen, it's not for us, you're not for us. Is there anyone you want me to call? And I say, yeah, could you call Paul Simpson at Carlisle, please? That would be amazing if you could do that. He's like, yeah, no problem at all. I played with Paul at Barnsley. I'll give him a call and I'm sure he'll be in touch. So I go home, get back on the tools, on the plastering, sort of fall out of love with football a little bit. Not training, not playing. The phone hasn't rang, so I'm a bit down in the dumps at the minute, feeling sorry for myself. And 6 weeks later, the phone rings, Carlisle United. Can you come in for a reserve game tomorrow? So I'm like, I'll be there. What time? Put the phone down. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I haven't done anything for 6 weeks. What am I going to do? So I go through the next day. I do okay. Luckily, I take my opportunity. I get a goal. Paul Simpson invited me to go training with them. I trained for about 4 weeks. And unfortunately, the gaffer, Paul Simpson, hadn't made his mind up. So he said, listen, Glenn, I know you're coming through to Carlisle every day. You're not getting paid. You're not picking any money up. How about you go down to Barrow with Lee Turnbull and play some games, pick up some money, but keep coming in here and training every day? I was like, perfect. Yeah, let's do that. So this goes on for another 6 or 7 weeks. And then finally, Paul Simpson says, yeah, we're going to sign you. And that was my big break.
And that was it then, because you were in pro football and you've never looked back since. But when that eventually did happen, what was the feeling like?
Just amazement, because I was stood in the Warwick Road end at Carlisle watching Carlisle get relegated from the second division, from League Two. And yeah, to sort of be told no by them at 16 and then be back there, I think it was at 19 or 20, was just like such a crazy situation to be in. But I just realised that was my opportunity and I was willing to give it everything. And I mean, I could have never imagined for it to turn out how it has.
And do you think that your life away from the game and your circuitous route back to it actually held you in good stead going forward as you went up the pyramid?
Yeah, it has. I think at every level I've been questioned. And I mean every level, and I mean that down to sort of the uni bond. what was the uni bond then? So yeah, I feel as though it's been a challenge, but it's also been very rewarding, and it's been great to prove a lot of people, a lot of managers, a lot of fans, and players wrong.
You did well at Carlisle United. Rochdale came and got you in 2006. 21 goals in 42 league games there. Why did it click so well?
Just had a manager that believed in me, Keith Hill. Steve Parkin actually took me there, and then unfortunately Steve got dismissed, and Keith Hill took over. Luckily for me, Keith Hill was the one that scouted me for Rochdale, so he had a little bit more time for me, let's say, and just joined a manager that believed in me and a club that was on the up at the time. Keith Hill was in charge along with Dave Flitcroft, and they were just really motivated and really enthusiastic to make the club better and the players in the club better. And they did that for me, and I just thrived in that environment.
Did you sort of look back at that period when you got to Rochdale? Did you ever envisage, when you look back now, that you would end up being a Premier League striker?
Never. I think even sort of in my late 20s, I sort of sat down with my wife and my parents and things, and obviously it comes up in conversation. And I always felt as though no one would have bought me in the Premier League. I had to be promoted into the Premier League. And at that time, I just couldn't see it happening.
Well, when Brighton came calling, they were a club in a very different shape to what they're in now. The Whitdean was its home. The Premier League seemed still quite a way away. What attracted you to them?
Just another step up, another club that believed in me, and another chance to prove my worth at a higher level.
Did it seem to fit straight away?
On the pitch, yes. Off the pitch, no. It was a huge change. Even though I'd been out to America and lived in America as a young lad, it was still quite difficult moving from the north down to the south. I mean, from Carlisle to Brighton is literally as far as you can get in England. So yeah, it was just a big change, really. But luckily, on the pitch, started really well. Started scoring goals. I think I got 9 in my first half season, and then really lost my way a little bit. I think sort of 25, 26, got really lazy. Felt as though I should be at that level. Possibly, I think looking back now, I'm big enough to admit that it was a bit of arrogance maybe crept in. And I wasn't working as hard as I should have on my game. And I really feel as though I had a year or two. I had a couple of injuries as well, which didn't help the situation. But I had a year or two of really losing my way.
Still to come on Up Front with Glenn Murray. He tells us why he left Brighton and joined none other than their arch rivals.
You look at the distance between the two clubs and you're like, it can't be that bad, but... I soon found out, as soon as I put pen to paper, I soon found out, and then I found out even more so early on in that season when Crystal Palace came down to Brighton.
You're listening to Upfront with Glenn Murray and Sam Matterface on TalkSport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides, and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
It's Glenn Murray in front of the former fans. He scores the goal, which surely will yield them all 3 points. It will be a massive 3 points for Bournemouth. Cook sent it goalwards and then 2 yards out. Glenn Murray came on off the bench to provide the finishing touch.
You mentioned that you thought you got a little bit lazy, a little bit arrogant, and you didn't really have over 18 months to a year or whatever, you didn't have the best spell. But in those 4 seasons, you scored 57 goals in 136 games. When was this spell? Because in the last 2 seasons, you appear to be flying.
So yeah, when Gus Poyet took over, that's really when I kick-started up again, started working harder on my game and things. I had a hernia operation that really lingered. I went out to Germany and got my hernias done. It didn't quite work. The club were telling me that's all they could do and that was the right thing to do. But then I needed to go back under the knife up in Leicester, which helped. And so that period in between those two injuries was a really frustrating period because I had the experts telling me it's right. And I knew deep down I wasn't right. And I couldn't get what I wanted out of myself. So I was really frustrated. But yeah, once I got over those troubles and sort of the club was in a bit of a situation where we were chopping, changing managers a little bit. We lost our way under a few managers. Russell Slade took over at one point and we didn't do very well in League One. In fact, I think we were down near the relegation zone. And then obviously Gus took over and he didn't only change sort of my outlook and my fortunes. He changed the club's fortunes. And I think he was the sort of the founder of the club we find today.
How did he do that? Because I've met him. I've worked with him on a professional basis and he's quite infectious, isn't he? Was he like that? As a manager, and was it great attention to detail or was it just drive that dragged you all into the same direction?
A little bit of everything. Obviously, he's 100 miles an hour, so he's getting his point over to you. He's enthusiastic. And then he just brought a different type of football. So I think Swansea were sort of doing it around that time in the Championship, like keeping the ball and things. And he brought that to us in League One, and it wasn't really heard of in League One at that time. And we played a sort of a different formation. We had Liam Bridcut sitting just in front of the... he was like a defensive midfielder. Again, not something that you found in League One much at that time. And yeah, he just worked with us, and we worked ourselves, and whoever we came up against, he wasn't afraid to sort of put our philosophy on them, and it just worked. And sort of when you get that momentum, it's difficult to stop. And some games you maybe shouldn't have won, but that momentum just carries you through, and you get that win, and then it's a snowball effect, and yeah, it ended up in us winning the league.
Bennett goes for glory. Oh! This time it is it. What a fitting way to take the League One title. Elliot Bennett, one of the players of the season, fires the seagulls to victory here at Walsall. Walsall 1, Brighton and Hove Albion 3. That seals the title.
Is that the highlight of that spell, getting that job done?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it came at the right time as well, because during that season we'd been going round what is now the Amex, the stadium being built. So we'll go out round there as a squad, and we'd see sort of the stadium we were going to be playing in next year, and how amazing it was going to be, especially compared to our current one. Yeah, the Withdean.
People don't realise this. This was a community sports centre. This was just like a local athletics track. And the club, when they were homeless, just bolted on a couple of porter cabins. There was a few sort of temporary stands put up that were miles away. It was a terrible viewing angle from wherever you were. It really was just a local sports ground, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But do you know what? It was ours, and we tried to make it home as much as possible. The people I felt the most sorry for was the away fans. They may as well sat on the beach. They were so far away. I think there was a long jump. There was a long jump sandpit, and there was a netting in front of them from the shot put. So it was like the worst. It was the worst view ever. But yeah, it was our home, and we dealt with it. And the complete opposite to the Amex now, where people want to come and play at the Amex because it's so beautiful. No one wanted to come and play at the Withdean, so we had an upper hand right away.
In 2011, you decide to move on. You're on a free transfer. Your contract was up. Why did you decide to do that? And why of all the places did you go to Crystal Palace? I mean, could you have gone anywhere else? Did you not know the fierceness of the rivalry? Or as a centre forward with that great self-belief, did you just think, oh, I can overcome that. I can get away with this?
Yeah, so I mean, first and foremost, I wanted to play at the Championship. I felt as though I'd been successful in League One. I felt as though it was the right time for my career. I was sort of 26, 27 at the time, and I felt as though that was the right time to step into the Championship. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be with Brighton. So I decided to go and join the arch rivals Crystal Palace, which... believe it or not, we hadn't come across Crystal Palace in my first 3.5 years at the club.
So you didn't realise it was as bad as everyone made out?
I'd heard that they were rivals, but I mean, as far as a northern boy's concerned, you look at the distance between the two clubs and you're like, it can't be that bad. But yeah, I soon found out, as soon as I put pen to paper, I soon found out, and then I found out even more so early on in that season when Crystal Palace came down to Brighton.
Glenn Murray, I said they wouldn't be cheering him if he scored later on today, able to turn it in from about 2 yards out.
Did you have any problems with scoring that goal or celebrating it afterwards?
No problem scoring the goal. That's what, like I've said many times, that's what I enjoy doing. That's every time I go on the pitch, that's what I want to do. I was delighted to score against them, but I didn't celebrate because I felt as though it was... It just didn't sit right. I still lived in the city. My children were at school in the city, and I didn't hate the club or anything like that. I was fond of the club, and I was fond of the players. I still had a lot of teammates and friends at the club. So, yeah, I just decided not to celebrate.
Later in your Palace career, you scored in a win over Brighton that actually put Palace on top of the table. I mean, what was going on here? I mean, it seems like this entwined history between Brighton, Palace, and Glenn Murray is almost its own narrative.
missed header from Tompkins, allows Murray in. Murray scored! Former Palace player Glenn Murray punishes the Eagles.
And Glenn Murray leisurely strolls up, right-footed in off the underside of the crossbar and into the back of the net. A pinpoint perfect penalty, no celebration. But for the third game in a row against Palace, Glenn Murray has found the back of the net.
Header by Hoonamar towards the back post and smuggled in at the far post by Glenn Murray, who knew exactly where it was going to drop. A corner delivered towards the edge of the six-yard area, headed back by Hoonamar. And then right on the line, Glenn Murray, the former Palace player, was there.
Halfway through, which I snapped my ACL against Brighton as well.
In a semi-final of a playoff.
Yeah. It just, whenever you come up against an old club, not that you've got a point to prove. They let you go. You want to prove them wrong, that they shouldn't have let you go and that you were good enough to stay. And I think, yeah, if out of any games you want to score, it's against your old clubs. And yeah, it seems to get the best out of me.
Yeah, it still does, doesn't it? Because you currently keep scoring against Crystal Palace, which is great for the Brighton now. You did get that injury, which curtailed the end of your Palace career, actually, and it meant that you ended up missing their big day out of Wembley in 2013. And we've said that it was sustained against Brighton. Did you know as soon as it happened that it was the season was over?
Yeah, I did. The pain was excruciating. I mean, I've got friends and teammates that tell me when they've done their ACL, it didn't hurt at all, but mine was like the worst pain I've ever felt on the football pitch. And I can actually remember the game was live on Sky, and I'm sort of shouting in pain, I'm screaming in pain, and I'm thinking, stop screaming because the camera's going to pan to you here and you're going to look like a right wimp. But I just couldn't stop shouting, and I think the first two people over to me were Wayne Bridge and Matthew Upson, and they were just like, just relax, they're coming, the help's coming. And yeah, the pain didn't subside for the next hour or so, like excruciating, and then yeah, I just knew right away that was the season done. And unfortunately, I think that was it for 10 months.
You did get quite a lot of big goals for Crystal Palace, including at Old Trafford in a League Cup game.
Oh, it's in! Murray claims it, and Crystal Palace regain the lead!
Is that sort of one of those standout moments for you in your time at Crystal Palace?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the standout moments. Scoring up at Old Trafford, obviously it wasn't a full strength Manchester United team, being the League Cup, but it was an amazing victory for a Championship side to go to Old Trafford and beat Manchester United. I think probably my best moment at Crystal Palace was scoring in, I think it was 2-1, a game against Manchester City at Selhurst Park, one night under the lights. I got one and Jason Puncheon got one. That was a really good night.
Levy heads on to Dan, and they have scored. The referee looked to the assistant, the flag stayed down. Murray has given Palace the lead. Another setback for the champions as they bid to retain the title.
And that was when you'd come back after being out on loan again after your problems with the ACL. Coming back after, you went to Reading, didn't you? Scored 8 goals, I think, in 18 league games there. But when you came back, did you think, hold on, I'm going to settle back at Palace again? Because you signed a new contract, didn't you?
I can just remember, I came back from my ACL. I played a few games under Tony Pulis. Never quite felt the same. And I felt as though I needed to go out and play games and get kicked about and sort of land on my knee and try and rediscover my form and to see if I could still score goals when you haven't done it for so long. Obviously, I think I came back into the Crystal Palace team in about February and I scored one goal to the end of the season, a bit part player. So I needed to go out and see if I'd lost it, and I needed to rediscover that touch. And Reading gave me that opportunity, and I fully expected to move on from Crystal Palace at that stage. I spoke to Neil Warnock, who was in charge, and he said, "Listen, Glenn, you're sort of fifth of five strikers. I'm happy for you to hang around and sort of try and prove me wrong or get into the team." But I also understand if you want to go. And I was like, brilliant. I said, I'll leave then. I'll go down to Reading. Just because I've got no time to waste. I think professional football career is so short, and to sit around sort of waiting for an opportunity, I'd rather just go and play games and try and score goals elsewhere. And then, yeah, obviously in my time away, Neil Warnock was sacked and Alan Pardew got brought in, and Alan Pardew took to me and gave me an opportunity. I went back, and yeah, it went well for the second half of the season there.
It did. And then off to Bournemouth in 2015.
Yeah, I can't have done that well.
It was like 6 months back. Alan Pardew had taken to you, as you said, but then very quickly you were off down south again. What happened there? What was that? Just because they'd come in for you and they fancied you, or because they had a £3 million bid rejected before eventually the deal was done?
Yeah, I mean, just basically, Crystal Palace accepted an offer, and I think when a club accepts an offer for you, obviously you can sit and you can see your contract out, but I think your time's up, to be honest. And like I say, I don't want to hang around, don't want to be a dead weight around the place. I want to go and try and play games, and Bournemouth gave me that next step, that next opportunity. And listen, it wasn't the right move for me in hindsight, but I wanted to take it, and yeah. Went down there, signed for Eddie Howe, and it started off really well and then just didn't end so well, really.
Was it a clash of personalities, tactical differences, or what?
I think it was a lot of little factors, to be honest. I was travelling in from Brighton every day.
It's a long journey.
Yeah, it took its toll on me. And then, yeah, maybe just didn't see eye to eye at some points with Eddie, the gaffer. I did actually learn a hell of a lot down at Bournemouth. Learned a lot from Eddie Howe. And I think that I took that into the next step at Brighton. But the Brighton step was really, really important, because I think I was 32, 33 at the time. And sort of I've had one move that didn't work. And that's almost, even though you're playing every day and you're still a professional footballer, when people stop seeing your name on a regular basis, and especially when your age starts with a 3, then it's a problem. You're falling out of the game almost. So that next step, that next move was so important to get right, because if I'd moved somewhere and it hadn't gone right for another year, that I think that would have been be almost finished in football. So I needed that next move to be right. And I did my homework. I watched a lot of Brighton, obviously them being my old club and me still living in the city. And I just felt as though that move was just perfect with them going so close to getting promoted to the Premier League the year before. And I saw the team, I saw the wingers, I saw the balls they put into the box. And I just thought that team is set up for me to do well in. And again, I could never have dreamt of it going so well.
So did you make the approach to them, or did they make the approach to you? Is that, how does it work? So you sit there and you think to yourself, right, I need to make sure, as a professional player, I need to make sure whatever happens next, it goes well. So do you say to your agent, look, I need to make sure that my next move is ace, and I reckon this club, and this club, can you make one of those happen?
So no, obviously me and my agent talk, and he talks to everyone pretty much. That's his job, isn't it? And yeah, I mean, I said, again, and another thing, sorry, was I was living in the city. I was getting older. The right club for me was the club on my doorstep.
Scallop with a free kick. Floats it in towards the back post. Up there goes Hemme. It's a good header. Back post, it's in! And it's Murray! Glenn Murray! At the Amex, back with the Albion, and back in the goals. The Seagulls lead by 2-0. Celebration for him. What a moment. In front of the North Stand, applause, quite rightly.
The club had changed by the time you got back again, hadn't it?
Just a little bit.
Now on a club heading towards the Premier League, a brand new stadium, they'd bedded in there as well. Did it feel different when you went back?
Yeah, it was like signing for a club with the same badge, but a completely different club. It was incredible.
Was it one of those scenes from Back to the Future where Marty McFly wakes up in an alternate 1985?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I mean, I left. I was playing at the Withdean with the running track round and the fans sitting on the beach, and then go to the Amex. What is it, 25,000? A beautiful designed stadium. And then the training ground I left, we were training at Falmer University, Sussex University, sharing changing rooms. In fact, we couldn't all fit into one changing room. There was three different changing rooms that all the boys had to get changed in. Students walking through whenever they wanted, as it was their campus. And then I walk into the new training ground, which is just state of the art and just an amazing place to go to work every day. So yeah, it was like joining a different club.
23 goals the season that sent you to the Premier League again. Big games, last minute thriller against Birmingham, hat trick against Norwich. What are your specific memories from your contribution to that season?
So obviously I feel as though at that point rejoining Brighton was the most pressure I'd ever had as a player.
Really?
Yeah, because I'd obviously left the club to go to their arch rivals, so the fans weren't particularly fond of me, even though I'd scored a lot of goals for them in the past. I think a lot of them felt after my stint at Bournemouth that I was probably past my best. So there was quite a few, let's say, negative outlooks. So I knew I had to turn the whole stadium to like me again, let's say, like me as a player, like me as a person. And that started brilliantly without my first home game at the Amex against Nottingham Forest on Friday night in the Championship.
Baldock did the really unselfish thing and squared it for Glenn Murray to get his second. Two for Murray on his home debut, three for Brighton. Fans singing we're top of the league. Very, very impressive. Brighton 3, Forest 0.
Managed to get two goals and really never look back.
Not specifically at this time, but what also were the challenges do you think you faced in making the step up between the Championship and the Premier League? And after going back into the Championship with Brighton and then getting promoted again, did you find it easier to make the adjustment the second time around?
I think I knew what the Premier League was about at that stage in my career. I think that for... Whenever I've stepped up a division, I've normally taken a little bit of time to sort of get to used to it, to understand the step up in physicality and tactics and things like that. And I felt as though stepping into the Premier League with Brighton that I was one of the few in the dressing room that had been there, and I needed to try and lead by example along with others like Steve Sidwell.
Glenn Murray was stretchered off in the game at Newcastle last week, but he was fit enough to continue, and Brighton will be thankful for that because their top scorer has notched again, and it's his 100th goal for Brighton and Hove Albion.
What did it mean for you to get to 100 goals? And what did it mean that because it was a solitary goal when you scored against Wolverhampton Wanderers in October, did it sort of have a greater significance for you? Were you even aware of it?
Yeah, I was aware of it, but it didn't really mean anything to me because it's sort of not about the now, it's about continuing. And obviously, it's really boring and it's really cliche. I mean, it is like goal by goal, week by week, and that's what got me to the 100. But I wanted to surpass the 100 and get over the 100 as quickly as possible because so much was made about it. I didn't want to get stuck on it. But no, I think the 100th goal I was really happy with. I think me and Bruno set a record for that goal, being the oldest combination for a Premier League goal, and yeah, it was a nice finish, and it got us 3 points, and yeah, I think I was just happier to get my 101st than my 100th. I wanted that off my back.
Murray, oh, he's found the corner. What a finish from Glenn Murray to give Albion the lead. Muted celebrations for his 100th league goal for the Albion.
You've got another 100 as well, didn't you? On the 9th of March 2019, you scored your 100th league goal for the Seagulls. Funnily enough, it was against...
I'm guessing Crystal Palace.
In a 2-1 away victory. And okay. And funnily enough, that meant that Brighton won the double over Crystal Palace that season, which also sort of helped reintegrate you into the hearts of the Brighton supporters. I think you were already there by then. But again, it just seems to just keep cropping up. Why does that fixture bring so much out in you?
I really don't know. I've got
for someone who didn't understand the rivalry 100% when you made the move. I take it you understand it now.
Yeah, I do. I understand it from both sides. I do now. I enjoyed playing for both clubs. I've had my best moments in my career at both clubs, and that fixture just, I think, brings the best out of me, because I'd like to think that both sets of fans like me.
Well, they do, don't they? And that's an odd position for someone to be in, really.
Yeah, and I want whoever's let me go, I want them to miss me. And I obviously want to keep my supporters happy as well. I want to score goals and win games, whoever it may be. But against your former clubs, it's that little bit sweeter.
New manager, new methods. Do you always have to constantly evolve?
Yeah, I think you do. I mean, obviously we've got a new manager, Graham Potter, in, and we've changed our philosophy as a football club, and this is the way that our chairman Tony Bloom sees us getting into the top 10 of the Premier League, which is he's came out and said is the aim to try and get there. And yeah, you've got to adapt. You've got to change yourself sometimes, and I think I wouldn't be still playing at my age if I hadn't adapted and changed. I mean, I've seen such a huge change in the game in itself.
What have you specifically done since the new manager has come in to change your game, to catch his eye, to get your way into the team?
So it's something that we sat down about and we spoke about very early on in his takeover at Brighton. And obviously, I as soon as you get a new manager, you have a look what his philosophy is, what he likes, what he doesn't like, whatever. And yeah, I couldn't see myself fitting in, so I brought that up with him. I spoke to him about that, and he just said, Glenn, like, I don't want you to change. I want you to be you. You're a proven goal scorer. I want you to stay sharp. I want you to stay ready. And if I choose to use you, then I'll choose to use you, and hopefully you can get me goals. And that was the understanding, and I was happy with that. And yeah, so far, so good.
Are you focused on getting the 124 goal mark at Brighton, which would take you beyond Tommy Cook as the record goal scorer? Is that something that sort of plays on your mind? I know you said the 100 wasn't necessarily a massive thing, but you're only the second man to ever do that. Is that on your mind?
No, not really. It would be absolutely amazing to get it. It would be. I think more than anything, it'd be something to look back on when I decide to hang my boots up. But for now, it's about the next goal and the next after that. And if it gets to 124, great. If it doesn't, well, so be it.
Okay. At the end of these interviews, we've been doing a sort of test for our centre forwards. We call it the perfect hat trick. Three questions about how well you know yourself. and to be honest with you, you ruined one of my questions already. Because I was going to ask you what was significant about the assist for your 100th goal for Brighton, but you've already told me.
So that's one. I've got one so far.
No, I'm changing the question now. So instead, I'll ask you this question first of all. Whose big day did you ruin on the 16th of May 2015?
I haven't got a clue whose day I ruined.
Okay. It was you had a penalty save but scored the rebound.
Oh, yes, I know now.
Glenn Murray just come back off of a loan spell with Reading. Saved by Mignolet, tucked in the rebound, pushes it home in front of the Anfield Road stand. He gets a little bit lucky, and it's Liverpool 1, Crystal Palace 3, and Steven Gerrard's Anfield career is ending in defeat.
Steven Gerrard, his last game for Liverpool.
Yes, you were in the Palace team, which beat them by 3-1.
And do you know what? After that game, our bus couldn't get near the stadium, so we had to walk about half a mile from the stadium, and the Liverpool fans were great, actually. Even though we'd just beaten them, they were really good. They're all sort of slapping us on the back and saying, well done, lads, you deserved it today and stuff. So yeah, it was a bit of a different exit from a stadium.
Who was in goal the night that you scored an extra time winner for Crystal Palace at Old Trafford for Manchester United?
Oh, it's in! Murray claims it, and Crystal Palace regain the lead. Unbelievable scenes at Old Trafford.
Who was in goal for Manchester United that night? Do you remember?
Was it Amos?
It was. It was Ben Amos.
Nice,
well done.
Yes.
And finally, the first goal of your second spell at Brighton came against Nottingham Forest. You scored two that night. But what was the final score?
We scored three. I'm not sure if it was nil or one. I'm going to go 3-1.
Brighton 3, Forest 0.
That was 3-0. You're right the first time. Should have gone with your instinct.
Yeah.
Listen, it has been sensational to talk to you. Thank you very much for giving me your time and contributing to the programme. I really do hope you get the 124 because your contribution to Brighton deserves it. Even if you're not focused on it, I'm sure we'll all be waiting and counting them off until you get them. So good luck to you. You've had a brilliant career and it's great to talk and be educated through it.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the time.
You've been listening to Upfront with Glenn Murray. And if you missed any of the show or just want to catch up, you can download the podcast from the TalkSport Game Day feed, available on Apple Podcasts, Acast and Spotify.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.